Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. So going back to our topic, which is, what is with the dog? What is with the saliva of the dog? We don't know. Shall we consult the doctors, the physicians, the scientists to tell us? Well, if they bring us something that suits our religion, we take it, but we do not make it the anchor. Why? Because tomorrow, another theory may come and say, no, this is wrong. And then I depended on that theory to authenticate my hadith, and the theory was turned down or was proven unworthy of being used. So now I am putting my iman, I'm putting the Quran, I'm putting the hadith on the line. No, this is not permissible. So we know that when a dog does this, this makes it najis. We have to clean it 7 times, one with the soil or with the sand, and the 7 times with water. Why? We do not know. All types of dogs? The most authentic opinion is, yes, all types of dogs. No exemption, no exception. What do you mean by all types of dogs? Are there dogs that we're not allowed to keep? Yes. The default is that you do not keep any dogs. It is forbidden for Muslims to keep any dogs. Not only that, the Prophet says, whoever keeps a dog in his house every day, one qirat, one carat of good deeds is deducted from his books of good deeds. And they said, what do you mean by carat of good deeds? The Prophet said, the equivalence of Mount Uhud. Imagine, every day this is deducted from your good deeds. What's equivalent to Mount Uhud, a whole mountain of good deeds, is taken away from you because of this dog. Is there any exception? The Prophet said, yes. Exception number one, to have a shepherd dog. I have a lot of sheep, a lot of cows, a lot of buffaloes, a lot of camels, and I need a dog to protect them from the wolves. It's permissible for you to take a dog. I have a big farm. I need a dog to protect it from the foxes and from those trespassers. It is permissible for you to take a dog. I hunt. And one of the means of hunting is to have greyhounds that go and catch the prey for me and hunt for me. This is mentioned in Surah Al-Ma'idah, chapter 5, in the very beginning, verse 3. Then this is also permissible to have dogs. And generally speaking, dogs for protection. Dogs for protection. If you have a big mansion, a big house. But nowadays, we don't need this. Because if you have a big house or a big mansion, you have an alarm system. But to have a dog claiming that it's for protection and for security, and then this dog is a chihuahua, and you carry all the time with you. What kind of protection is this? No, this is not permissible in Islam. These are the types of dogs that you're allowed to have. Other than that, it is forbidden. Now, some scholars cascaded this down, and they said, if the saliva of the dog is so filthy, then the urine is even worse. So can we do the same for the urine? And the answer is, shall I ask a question again? Yes, you lost the question. Do wake up, please. The question was, some scholars say, if this impurity, great impurity of the saliva of the dog, then what about his urine, which is even filthier? So do we apply the same for the dog's urine as we apply for the licking? Yes, the majority of the audience, not of the scholars, said yes, but the answer is no. The Prophet only restricted this to licking in the utensils. And we have ample evidence that the Medina was filled with dogs. Not only that, in an authentic hadith, the dogs used to enter the masjid and leave. The Masjid of Medina, no doors, no gates, no marbles, no concrete buildings. It was open. So this indicates that the dogs, whenever they went in, came out, they may have urinated, they may have not. Yet the Prophet did not tell them to treat it in the same fashion as they treat the licking of the dog, the saliva of the dog. Okay, let's go a little bit further. Some scholars cascaded this again to pigs. What is more filthier, pigs or dogs? No, dogs. In dogs, we're instructed to wash once by soil and the seven following washes by water. With pigs, we don't have this instruction. So pigs remain as they are. However, they're filthy. They're najis. We cannot eat them. We cannot grow them. I heard that some Muslims grow them in the thousands. And they trade with them. This is completely forbidden. If Allah forbade something, Allah made its money or interest or benefit forbidden as well. One more question for the road. I don't think we have any more to say. What about if I'm walking in the mall and this huge big dog comes and likes me and he starts licking my hand or licking my foot or licking my trousers? Astaghfirullah. Do I have to take all of this out and put sand to it and then wash it seven times? Some schools of thought said yes, and this is one of the opinions in Hanbali school of thought. However, the most authentic opinion is nope. The Prophet strictly limited using the soil and the seven washes with what? Licking what? Utensils. So if the dog licks my shoe, I don't have to use this with my shoe. Sand and seven washes. If he licks my hand, I just simply wash my hand. So we move on to take your questions. If you don't have any, alhamdulillah, I believe you don't have any. You have a lot.
Sheikh, this is a general pertaining to the topic, the first which you started. Sheikh, the hadith has been compiled, you know, for so many centuries. But of late, particularly in India, we hear that, you know, it is only in the last 100 or 200 years people are talking about hadith. Where were they sleeping for the past 1200 years, you know? This comment is always received. So any comment on that?
Yes, talk is cheap. Talk is cheap. These people who talk, they talk without knowledge at all. If you go back and check your Quran in chapter 7, verse 33, Allah Azza wa Jal made the things that are forbidden starting from bottom to top. The last thing, he says, Allah, قُلْ إِنَّمَا حَرَّمَ رَبِّي الْفَوَاحِشِ مَا ظَهَرَ مِنْهَا وَمَا بَطَنَ. All kinds of sins, whether apparent or concealed, is forbidden. وَالْإِثْمَ وَالْبَغْيَ بِغَيْرِ الْحَقِّ. And to be aggressive and to put oppression upon people without any legitimate reason. Number two. Number three, وَأَن تُشْرِكُ بِاللَّهِ مَا لَمْ يُنَزِّلْ بِهِ سُلْطَانًا. To associate others with Allah without any proof. This is higher, huh? The last and highest major sin is وَأَن تَقُولُوا عَلَى اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ. To say on Allah without knowledge. Speaking without knowledge, Ibn al-Qayyim says, is greater than shirk. Is more severe than shirk. And that is why Allah mentioned in Surah Al-Baqarah that the shaitan instructs you to do sins, fahsha, and also to say on Allah what you do not know. So the person ordering you to do this is shaitan. Why do I say this? Akhi, those who talk like this about Islam, about Sunnah, about Quran, and about compiling the Sunnah, and we don't believe in the Sunnah, bring them and tell them, do you know Arabic? Said, no. Do you know Quran by heart? Said, no. Do you know what is the meaning of this ayah? No. When you answer the call of nature, how do you clean yourself? How do you perform wudu? If he performs wudu in front of you, you will find 10 mistakes. They are ignorant. They don't know the religion. What makes me sure about this? It's very simple. They claim that Islam or Muslims did not care about Sunnah except in the last 100 years. How stupid they are. Imam Abu Hanifa, may Allah have mercy on his soul, one of the great Imams of Islam, narrated hadith, but he didn't travel a lot. Who came after him? Malik ibn Anas, one of the greatest compilers of hadith. He has the book of Al-Muwatta, which is well known to all people of hadith. Then came after him his student, Muhammad ibn Idris al-Shafi'i, who traveled all over to collect hadith. And he is the one who said, whenever the hadith goes against my opinion, reject my opinion into the dustbin. And his companion, and also considered to be one of his students, Ahmad ibn Muhammad ibn Hanbal, the fourth imam of the school of thought of Hanbali, he compiled one of the biggest books of hadith known as Musnad al-Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, and it's until today being used by scholars and students of knowledge. He was the teacher of al-Imam al-Bukhari. Bukhari was the teacher of al-Imam Muslim. Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal was the teacher and the guru of Abu Dawood, al-Tirmidhi, etc. So they lived in the 2nd century and the 3rd century Hijri, which is about 12 centuries ago. So when this ignorant person tells me that only recently they've discovered the power of Sunnah, I tell him, brother, go and sleep. Because when you sleep, Allah rewards you. You're not affecting others with your ignorance and lack of knowledge. So Allah Azza wa Jal, when He revealed the Quran, He sent our messenger to explain it to us and to elaborate more on the religion so that the religion is complete. And it cannot be complete without the Sunnah. And with the grace of Allah, the Sunnah is part of the dhikr that Allah has pledged on Himself to protect till the Day of Judgment. And this Sunnah is what we are studying at the moment. Its power, its legislation that we get from it is what gives the Muslims pride. We know every single hadith, whether it's authentic and not authentic. We know the compilers of the hadith. We know the chain of narrators, each one of them. When they lived, when they died, who they heard, who were their teachers, who were their students. And we can simply tell you that this is authentic or not authentic because Allah preserved this. I'm afraid that this is all the time we have. Until we meet next time, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.